Welcome to the Happy Menopause Podcast with me, Jackie Lynch, registered nutritional therapist and founder of the Well Nutrition Clinic, where I specialise in women's health and the menopause. There are so many ways that diet and lifestyle can help to relieve a whole range of menopause symptoms. And my new book, The Happy Menopause, Smart Nutrition to Help You Flourish, is packed with practical nutrition advice to support you through this transition. It's out now and available to order in all the usual places. Join me and my expert guests on a journey through midlife in this podcast and find out how you can have a healthy and happy menopause. Probably the most well-known of the menopausal symptoms, the hot flush has provided endless material for humorists over the years. But it's no fun when it's happening to you. It can cause huge distress, especially in a professional or social situation, or if it's persistently disrupting your sleep. But help is at hand in this episode with the brilliant Dr. Melanie Smith, who is just the woman we need to provide us with some practical flush-busting strategies. But first, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my sponsor, Emmapel, who make it possible for me to produce this podcast. Many women notice that their skin becomes drier, less firm, or more wrinkly as they transition through the menopause. And this is due to the decline in estrogen, which affects collagen levels. So here's where Emmapel can help, with revolutionary skincare products that target the root cause of menopausal skin aging by encouraging the skin to act as if the estrogen was still there. The technology awakens the skin's messaging system so that the cells work more effectively and behave like younger skin cells. Emmapel's gorgeous serum and night cream are also packed with skin-friendly ingredients to make a tangible difference to the health and appearance of your skin. Believe me, a little Emmapel goes a long way. You can get 20% off if you use the promotional code HAPPY20 at Emmapel, Emmapelle.co.uk. And so on to today's episode. I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Melanie Smith. She's a clinical health psychologist who played a key role in developing and facilitating the first cognitive behavioural therapy, or CBT as it's often known, for menopause groups as part of an innovative research trial. This research has since been recognised by the NHS as a valid and effective non-medical approach to managing menopause symptoms. And Mel is here today to explain to us what a huge difference it can make to dealing with hot flushes. So let's find out about her proven strategies to help us keep our cool. Welcome to the Happy Menopause, Mel.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's nice to be here.
Well, I'm very excited about this and I can't wait to hear what you've got to say. So, as always, let's find out a bit more about you, first of all. So tell us your story. What's your background and how did it lead to where you are now?
Okay, so I studied psychology at university and trained as a clinical psychologist and then initially started working with children and families and then fancied doing something a bit different after a year or two in the job and noticed an advert to work on some new research trials looking at cognitive behaviour therapy for menopause symptoms. And this was kind of back in 2008, where menopause was still very much taboo. It really wasn't spoken about at all. And it sounded like a really nice post. It was a kind of combination of clinical work, so kind of facilitating the therapy within the groups, but also the research side. And that's kind of when I started working with Professor Myra Hunter, who's, you know, really pioneered this field. And we kind of went from there, really. So it was okay. Exciting.
So this was pretty early on in your career, really, by the sounds of it. And you must have been relatively young compared to those of us who are now, you know, either going through or beyond the menopause.
Yes, absolutely. So that's a really good point, actually. So I was in my early 30s. I hadn't had any children at that point, and I was facilitating groups with women kind of older than me in a different life stage. I think I learned a lot from the women in those groups. I always, you know, in terms of kind of where they were at that point. And now, over a decade later, I find myself in that in that same place, recognizing, you know, a lot of the stresses and demands that they were under as they went through menopause. And, you know, a big part of the intervention that we were working on was kind of looking at not just the biomedical aspects of menopause, but the psychosocial context, I guess, within.
So what does that mean? What's biomedical? What's psychosocial?
So biomedical, I guess if we look at the biomedical point of view, we're looking primarily at hormonal changes. So the cessation of menstrual periods and the reduction in estrogen that is kind of part of the menopause transition. If we view it as a part of a woman's reproductive life stage. So puberty is when we become capable of having children, and menopause is the end of that point. So that's your kind of, if we're looking at a very strictly biomedical point of view, that's kind of how we would view menopause.
Right.
And I guess a psychosocial approach looks more broadly at the social context, first of all, within which that takes place. So the social context recognises the very negative narrative that's kind of prevalent. I think that's shifting slightly since we did the groups, but certainly at that point in time, women who attended the groups, you know, felt very ashamed that they were going through what essentially is a normal life stage for women.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also the social context is, I think for midlife, I noticed one of your other podcasts is about the sandwich generation. So,
yeah.
And that really kind of jumps out to me really, because the women that attended the groups at that stage in life, I'm at that stage in life at the moment, you're juggling God knows how many responsibilities, potentially working, looking after family members of various ages, and so just recognizing that it's actually quite a stressful period of life. And then the psychological aspect, so that's, I guess that's my area of expertise or my area of training, is looking at how you respond to, so primarily it was about how do we respond to menopause symptoms? What does the psychological literature tell us about why we might feel anxious, why we might feel ashamed or embarrassed of symptoms or of menopause generally? So pulling all that in together and turning it really into an intervention that helps coping.
Yeah, very interesting. So I think what you say really makes sense, because I do feel that women in midlife have got a lot of wisdom. And I think it must have been really interesting for you as a young 30-something, particularly before you'd even had children yourself, as you say, that suddenly I think you were reaching out and talking to a group of women who know stuff but probably didn't value or recognise their own worth at that stage in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what I loved about this area of work, and particularly as a younger woman at that point, is that you have a groups of women who come along and they have a lot of shared experiences, and hearing them talk about those experiences, particularly in a kind of female context, what it is to be a woman, what life is like, what the common themes were that arose, but also recognizing and trying to work with them to build on their resiliency in terms of managing all those different kind of responsibilities on top of having, you know, quite intrusive and distressing menopause symptoms.
Yeah. Let's sort of get down to it, because we really want to be focusing on hot flushes, and they're probably the single best known, I think, symptom of the menopause, and certainly the butt of endless, not terribly funny jokes.
Yes.
First of all, what are they and why do they happen?
Hot flushes occur during menopause. We all know that estrogen levels reduce, our hormonal levels go into fluctuation, and estrogen is the key hormone here. So we know that estrogen is involved in our body's temperature regulation mechanisms. So if you imagine we have a window, if you like, of temperatures that our body tolerates and it will fluctuate throughout the day. And we call this the thermoneutral zone. So as long as your inner, your core body temperature stays within the thermoneutral zone, then your body doesn't need to activate its temperature regulation mechanism. So for example, if we get too hot, our body, we sweat, and that helps us to cool down and lower our body temperature. And we also, our bodies also activate something called vasodilation. And this is where the blood vessels under the skin expand. So that's when you can get a bit flushed. And that's your body's way of taking the blood away to the cooler part of your body, your skin, away from your inner core, if you like. So that's when we get too hot. Those are our kind of cooling mechanisms. And similarly, the other way, if we get too cold, we have vasoconstriction. So our blood moves away from the skin, but also it activates mechanisms such as shivering. So that's kind of, all of us have those temperature regulation mechanisms. Now, during menopause, the thermoneutral zone, so that's that window that if you're within that window, you don't have any of those temperature regulation mechanisms. You're in the zone, yeah? During menopause, that window gets much, much narrower. Our body's ability to tolerate minor fluctuations in temperature is much smaller, yeah? And that's because of the effect of estrogen. It has a direct impact on body's temperature regulation. So that those minor fluctuations, a minor increase in temperature that we probably wouldn't even notice, is enough to activate your cooling mechanisms. Right. And that's your hot flush. So your body's cooling it. It thinks it's too hot. It's cooling itself down and you get quite flushed. It's your body's attempt to regulate. And similarly, with night sweats and night chills, you dropped out the bottom of that window. So your body activates the mechanism to cool you back up again. So the other key thing I think to understand is that we know the research tells us that stress also further impacts the thermoneutral zone. So as well as estrogen, or the reduction in estrogen, reducing the size of the thermoneutral zone, the more stressed we are, the narrower that window comes.
Yeah, and of course, we've just discussed already the fact that midlife is probably the single most stressful time of a woman's life, with it coming. It's coming at us from all angles, let's face it.
It's a perfect storm, a combination of, you know, reducing estrogen levels and all the kind of stresses and responsibilities of midlife coming together in one.
Yeah. And of course, in a social situation or a professional situation, a hot flush is something that women dread. And so I suppose it becomes a bit of a vicious circle. They're stressed about the possibility of having one, so their zone becomes more sensitive as a result, and then they have one.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair? So I always think back to when we were initially doing the research, we were testing out different skin monitors that measured minor, very minor changes in skin temperature, which helped us. We used within the research to pick up and measure hot flushes objectively. And we were testing them out as the research team, and I wore one of those just before I went into a room where I was speaking to quite a big room of doctors about trying to recruit women into the research trials. Now, all I remember is walking into that room, feeling only very slightly anxious, not feeling hot or anything. Just, I remember thinking to myself, I'll be glad when this is finished. Now, when we downloaded my skin monitor, a couple of hours later, there was a huge spike in my body temperature. So at the time, I wasn't going through menopause. So I was able to go in and kind of talk to the room without having to then worry about, oh, I'm having an enormous hot flush at the same time. Because when we're stressed or even a little bit anxious, our body activates, we become physiologically aroused in terms of our stress response. That involves an increase in body temperature. So if you think about in stressful situations, we know that hot flushes are more likely to occur. But even just anticipating that a situation is going to be stressful, and, you know, thinking, oh, I hope I don't have a hot flush in this situation just before you go into it, might be enough to make you feel stressed enough to actually trigger it. It's a vicious cycle.
Yes. Yeah, I see. So tell us a bit more about the research. I mean, what came out of it?
Were there any surprises? We used cognitive behaviour therapy within a group setting specifically. We were very much focused on helping women to understand their thinking and their behaviour responses to hot flushes and how that might contribute to feeling stressed out during hot flush, overwhelmed, ashamed. So a range of kind of responses. And then giving them some CBT techniques. Well, first of all, I think it's important to highlight CBT often is also about giving information. So giving them education about hot flushes, so explaining the thermoneutral zone actually in itself can be really helpful because, you know, women coming into the groups would often say, I have no idea why this is happening or what's going on. My body feels completely out of control. And so if you can give them information about this is why you're having hot flushes, it's about the thermoneutral zone, that immediately helps women to kind of normalize. It helps us to normalize what we're going through. We have an explanation. We understand it. That makes it less anxiety provoking. Linking in when you have a hot flush, how do you feel? And, you know, women would talk about those range of responses. And then we try and get them to look at their thinking patterns during hot flushes. So we specifically focused on hot flushes and night sweats in the intervention. The findings of the study was that we weren't aiming, and I think this is really key, we weren't aiming to get rid of them because we can't. We're not interfering with estrogen levels, yeah? We're looking at enhancing coping. And what we found at the end was that coping was significantly increased in that problem ratings of those symptoms reduced significantly. But there were also secondary findings in terms of generally reported a significant improvement in mood, a reduction in stress, and an improvement in their health-related quality of life. So that there were a range of benefits to the intervention. And I think my observations, and we kind of did interviews with a lot of the women afterwards, was that just being kind of talking with women going through the same experience as you and feeling like you're not alone with this in itself, I feel was really, really beneficial. And having a couple of strategies that you can put into place helps enhance that feeling of control.
It's very interesting because I think with something like hot flushes, it feels like such a mechanical thing that the assumption is that you need to address the mechanism and that's the only way you can actually manage the hot flush. So did you have some trouble or do you find that with patients sometimes there's a bit of a mental block about the notion of using a psychological technique to manage something that seems like such a physical symptom?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a really reasonable question to ask. Why would I come and speak to a psychologist when essentially I'm trying to manage a physical health problem? And I think the way that I often answer that is to look at the impact that the physical health issue is having on their day-to-day life. And how does that make you feel? What does it get in the way of? What have you started to reduce or do less of as a consequence of having that, which then may have a knock-on impact on your mood? So let's look at helping you to rebuild your confidence. So we might not be able to reduce the symptom or take it away, but we can help reduce the impact of the symptom. So that's kind of how I will explain it. I think what's interesting is that what we also found in the menopause research was that women reported at the end of it that some of them, there was a significant reduction in their self-reported hot flushes. So, and we weren't sure, and even the women that we were working with weren't sure, am I having less of them or they're just not bothering me as much? So I'm not paying attention to them all the time. So,
yeah. And either way, that's a win.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's sort of drill down into CBT a little bit more. You've explained some of the basics, but how is it different from other talking therapies?
So CBT focuses on very much the here and now. It's about coping in the here and now. We look at The fundamental premise really of CBT is how we feel in any situation will be influenced by our appraisals or our thoughts within that situation. And those thoughts and our feelings then influence what we do within a situation. And so the fundamental kind of premise is that often we, because our minds are busy and we're thinking all the time, we don't question our thoughts. We often just accept them as factual information about the situation because that we have so many of them. And actually what CBT does is look at situations that you find particularly distressing, focuses really on your thinking patterns, I guess, within those situations, what you do within the situation. And what can happen is once we've got an idea of these other factors that are present, then we can influence change. So we can start to change the way that we think about the situation. That doesn't mean, and this is really important, that I'm encouraging, oh, you just have to think happy thoughts. That's a big myth about CBT. It's really not what CBT is about. CBT is about giving you some strategies to take a step back and look at the situation as a whole. Because we know from the research literature that when we feel anxious in a situation, that normally goes along with anxious thinking, so threat-focused thinking, we're hypervigilant to anything related to that threat. It's about being able to acknowledge potential threats, but also step back and look at the evidence and test out thoughts, if you like. So if we think about a menopause example, a lot of women in the groups talked about feeling embarrassed and ashamed. So common thoughts would be, everybody's looking at me. I look absolutely bright red. I look like I'm not coping. And then we'd give them some strategies to take a step back and recognize that this was anxious thinking and reframe it to get them to kind of look at the evidence in the situation. Actually, was everybody in the room, every single person was staring at you and noticing your hot flush, for example. Yeah. So, and just being aware of your thinking processes and your tendency to go down an anxious pattern when you're feeling stressed is really helpful, because then you can stop, right? Okay, that's what I'm thinking, but actually let's just take a step back and test out that thought. Is that 100% true? What else is going on in the situation? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think one of the things that's great about it is that people aren't terribly observant, in my experience.
No.
And we tend to assume that everyone's looking at us and everyone's spotted that our neck's gone a bit red. But actually, a lot of the time, people are totally oblivious because they're focused on their own stuff. And I think perhaps, you know, some CBT techniques just helps you put that back into context a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. What we found is that, so we know from the psychological literature that when we feel embarrassed or self-conscious, the way that we process through our thoughts or experience a situation, we switch our focus of attention onto ourselves rather than looking out into the situation. And then we process the situation from how we think we look. And often in the middle of a hot flush, you then add in those variables. So I feel hot, sweaty and anxious, and I'm going to process this from everybody else's perspective. And it just heightens your self-consciousness and your embarrassment. And so we did a survey actually as part of the groups where we asked younger people, anonymized, we described a woman having a huge hot flush at work, so dripping with sweat, bright red, and we asked them to write down, what do you think's going on? And just the vast range of responses that we got. Has she just come back from the gym? Has she run up the stairs at work? You know, is she feeling a bit stressed? Is she coming down with something? So yes, people did sometimes say, is it menopause? But actually the vast, you know, kind of 50 or 60% of people gave lots of other potential reasons for why someone might kind of look like that. And so feeding back that information, and, you know, you might feel embarrassed and kind of ruminate about that situation afterwards. What came back from the survey was that actually once the people answering the survey had come out of that interaction, they'd moved on to whatever else was going on in their day.
Yeah.
It's just kind of drawing your attention really to the cognitive biases that are present when we feel certain emotions. Mm. And by building that knowledge and understanding, it puts you in a better place to then address anxious perspectives.
Okay, so it sounds amazing. Anyone listening who's thinking, well, I'd like a bit of that, what do they do? Can you get it on the NHS? Do you go via your doctor? How do you get CBT?
There's an information sheet on the Women's Health Concern website, which is run by the British Menopause Society, about CBT. So if you want some more information and an overview of the kind of intervention, there's information there.
And I'll be sure to put a link to that in the show notes.
At the moment, CBT as a non-hormonal intervention is actually in the NICE guidelines. So those are the NHS guidelines that pulls together the best available evidence for health conditions. Now, there's a bit of a gap, if you like. So at the moment, it might be inconsistent in terms of provision of CBT specifically for menopause in your area. But the other option is the self-help intervention, which we did as part of the research study. What we found was the self-help intervention, which was a four-week self-help interactive guide that people were randomized to, perhaps instead of doing the group therapy, the outcomes of that were the same as the group therapy. So I would assume, probably because I was a group therapist, that the group therapy outcomes would be better. But actually, women completing the self-help guide had equally good outcomes. And that's really encouraging. And that intervention is now available. So the Routledge book that I co-authored with Professor Myra Hunter, that's Managing Hot Flushes and Night Sweats, the four-week self-help guide that we used within the research is contained within that book.
Okay, so what can people expect? I mean, can you talk us through some of the techniques that might be explained either in the self-help guide or in a group session?
Yeah, so we would start off introducing what we would call a biopsychosocial model. So recognising the influence of hormones, but also recognising the influence of the social context of menopause and how we think. So that kind of basic CBT models, how we think influences how we feel and what we do in a situation. And then we would initially, the first part of the therapy really focuses on stress management, because we know that this cohort of women are, you know, have perhaps higher levels of stress. And we also know that stress makes menopause symptoms worse.
Oh, yes.
And I think the really key point is that menopause symptoms themselves, I would view as a stressor, if you like. Yeah. They're another thing to deal with, during quite a busy life. So it's just kind of recognizing that, really, and then looking at encouraging you to start to look at ways to manage your stress. So we kind of would run through a range of stress management strategies. Now, I think what was really key for me from kind of facilitating the initial groups and since then is that the women that got the most out of the intervention were, or began to gain the benefits from it earlier, were those that from an early point were able to start to take steps to reduce stress. Now, and I think it's really important to recognise that that's really challenging because of the life stage that we're at, because often we've kind of pulled in lots and lots of different directions.
Yeah.
And so that what the CBT does, the strategies that are covered, look at how, you know, it's kind of well-being behaviours such as exercise and time for yourself and making the most, or trying to find opportunities for a little bit of time for you. But often it's our thoughts that can get in the way of us doing that.
Yes.
So almost kind of like, well, I shouldn't be doing that. I've got other things to do. We often prioritize everybody else's needs before our own.
Yeah.
And so for me, the women that made the biggest shift early on were the ones that were able to work with that and begin to start to put themselves first. And that doesn't mean necessarily any kind of huge major life changes. That might mean just learning to say no occasionally. It's okay to say no.
It's something I say to my clients all the time, because I think anyone who's listened to this podcast regularly will know I'm always banging on about stress and the importance of me time and really stepping back and looking after yourself. So I think, I mean, all of this makes complete sense to me. And the other thing I'd throw in there in terms of stress management, of course, is the nutrition, the diet side of things, because we have to bear in mind the physiological stress that certain things we put in our body can cause. You know, alcohol's a classic. We know that alcohol, all the research is clear, and frankly, all the experience out there is very obvious as well. It dramatically affects hot flushes. Even if you're just having, you know, a little civilized glass a day, even that, if your hot flushes are a problem, you should think about losing it. The impact of things like caffeine, again, a huge potential stressor on the body. So it's not just external factors. You need to think also about what you're putting in your diet, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of an early part of the CBT is also about recognizing those triggers. Mm. So caffeine, caffeinated drinks, alcohol can be also another trigger. So kind of looking at it as a general lifestyle change, a need to really kind of look after and nourish yourself, if you like, in a variety of ways at a time in your life, because to put you in the best possible place, really, to be able to manage physical changes, but also the kind of psychological changes that you might be going through.
Yeah. And I suppose along with exercise, things like paced breathing, I know there's a lot of research around that.
Yes, so the paced breathing, that was a really popular part. And I think it's just a really accessible exercise that you can do. So essentially, it's diaphragmatic breathing. So it's recognizing that when we're stressed, or I almost think when we've just grown up, we have like lots of responsibilities, we get into really bad breathing habits. Now, so diaphragmatic breathing, if you place your hand on your chest and you place one on your stomach and you take a breath in, so it's kind of a slow breath in through your nose. And what we want is for your hand on your chest to stay still, and we want your hand on your tummy as you breathe in through your nose to rise slowly. Is that working?
Yes. Yeah, sorry if there was some rustling there. I moved the mic, everybody.
So we're breathing in slowly through our noses. And if your tummy's moving out, it's moving in the right directions, because that means the air's getting deeper into your lungs. And then you exhale just slowly through your mouth, and your hand on your tummy should just naturally fall back down, because your tummy will go in at that point. Okay.
So very similar to yogic breathing, really.
Absolutely. So if you do yoga anyway, or meditation or anything like that, you're probably kind of a step ahead already. Now, the reason that paced breathing was such an integral part of the intervention was that it has been found, again, research literature found that if women did this outside of hot flushes, just generally took time during the day to kind of just come back to breathing for 5 or 10 minutes, that helps to kind of switch off our body's stress response. So it's a really good thing to do when you're feeling stressed and your thinking starts to go stressed. Yep. It's that pause button that you need, and it helps just to help you feel a bit calmer and a bit grounded so that you can respond in a more constructive way. But in the context of kind of hot flushes and night sweats, the idea is that it switches off your body's stress response, and it also helps bring cool air into your body. It slows down your breathing rate. And this lovely research study showed that if women kind of practiced that at the onset of a hot flush, and we certainly got the women that we were working with to do that, those first signs of a hot flush or during a hot flush, it helped them to switch their focus from what do I look like to others, or feeling overwhelmed by the heat, and just switch their attention to calm breathing, but it also has a physiological impact. So it just calms your nervous system down a little bit and it helps you to feel more in control. So that's a really important part of the intervention, just using that during hot flushes to help just switch off your stress response. And what we found was that women, what we find is that women come back and they say, it either helps me to just focus on my breathing and that helps me to feel calm. Or for some of the more fortunate women that we work with, they say, actually, if I use that when I first get those initial feelings of a hot flush, once I'd practiced it for a couple of weeks, I could actually kind of head them off at the pass before they kicked in properly. So it's really valuable.
Well, I think what's also great about that is, as you say, it's something that people can practice on their own. And you've got all the details of that, presumably, in your book, Managing Hot Flushes and Night Sweats. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. So all the details are in there. And there's a link in the book to the Routledge website where there's a pace breathing exercise that you can kind of work through. But if you're not buying the book, that's absolutely fine. If you go onto YouTube and look at diaphragmatic breathing, just a couple of minutes of that, that's the general technique that you would use. So that's the idea.
I'm going to put links to the book anyway on the show notes because I think it sounds great and I think people will want to follow the whole programme.
Yes, do.
It's wonderful because if people are feeling a little bit shy or worried about actually getting referred to a group, they can crack on with that in the first instance and it sounds as if it was very effective as well, which is just great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for some women that came along and wanted to participate in the research, they said, I don't really want to do a group. I just want to learn some strategies. So actually the self-help book was a really good resource for them.
Brilliant. I'll be sure to put links to the Managing Hot Flushes and Night Sweats book on the show notes because I'm fairly sure people will want to actually run through the self-help thing on their own and may not necessarily be so keen on doing a group session. And of course, I'll also put a link to your other book, Living Well Through the Menopause.
Thank you. That's a more holistic, it looks at lots of other symptoms as well as hot flushes and night sweats. Thank you.
Fantastic. So conscious of time, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap up because this has been fascinating. And I think everybody's going to be really interested to take a look at your book, really, and drill down into this in a bit more detail. But tell us, Mel, from all the things you've learned through your years of clinical work, what would your top two tips be for women who are struggling with the menopause?
I think that using menopause as an opportunity to develop your self-care, recognizing the need to do that in order to support yourself through what can be a challenging time, and to be more self-compassionate. So tuning in to those kind of, your internal dialogue, how do you talk to yourself during the day? You're kind of saying, hurry up, do this, what are you doing that for? Being able to be more compassionate, to talk to yourself as you would do your nearest and dearest and support yourself in that
so
way.
Absolutely being kind to yourself. Those are real words of wisdom. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's so reassuring to hear that we really do have the means within us to deal with hot flushes. So let's all remember to breathe and to work on that stress. I did an episode on nutrition to manage stress and boost resilience back in season 2, which you might find helpful with that. If you'd like to find out more about Mel and her books, or more generally about CBT, I've put all the relevant information and links on the show notes, which you'll find on the podcast page of my website, well-well-well.co.uk. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you listen on. And make sure you tell all your friends. It makes a huge difference to the visibility of the podcast and really helps to spread the word. Because every woman deserves to have a happy menopause. Thanks so much for listening. Bye for now.